up, America!
Wake up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. This is Michael Dean, the Iron Hamster, and I'm here sliding down the inner tubes with Davi Barker, the shiny badger. Shiny badger, right?
Yeah, that's right. Here. I'm awake.
There's 11 of these names I have to remember now. And you know what I just have to say is Schumer, Feinsteining. I can't even try it. I'll swear. Go ahead. Can you do it?
Gravel, Feinstein, Roving, Rehnquist, Santorum, Boxer, Lewinsky.
Barbara Streisand. Yeah.
That's, all of that.
That's our radio-friendly cursing. The whole buzz. Now, this is kind of interesting because you told me about this movie that I should watch that we're going to discuss later called Pontypool. I love that name. I love saying that word. It's a town in Canada, and I guess it's
an infectious word.
It's also a town in Scotland, which is what it's named after in Canada. And it's a zombie movie that all takes place in a radio station with a talk radio guy. And, you know, you said, I told you I didn't like zombie movies. You love zombie movies. And you said, Michael, if there's a zombie movie for you, it's this. You know, there's not a lot of violence in it. It takes place in a radio station, you know, and like the virus spreads on radio. And I really liked it. And I guess you didn't tell me there's not much violence in it, but I did like that about it. But here's the thing. I'm watching this movie on Netflix, Pontypool, about a talk radio host, you know, talk radio people who get infected with a virus and act bizarrely and violently and strangely and spout inanities. And I get a instant message from Nikki Darling who says, are you listening to this? And I'm like, what? I'm watching a movie. You know, we're not in the same room. Am I listening to what? And she's like, turn on LRN. And I turn it on and I hear Ian going, and I really want to apologize for my co-host. Mark has left the building. Don't know if he's going to be back for a while, but I really just sincerely want to apologize to all our affiliates and listeners. And I'm like, whoa, what did I listen? And it was at the end of the third hour. So I waited, you know, 10 minutes until the GCN Autobot uploaded the archive of it and downloaded it. And it went out on air cussing. Now, here's the thing. We have all these shows. We have a cuss dump, but it's only 6 or 7 seconds long. And Mark cussed for about 25 or 40 seconds. And Ian cut his mic, but it was so loud it went out over Ian's mic. So it went out on the air. And I think they'll survive it. I'm sure they'll survive it. It'll be good. And Mark and Ian are both recovered from it and laughing about it. And I've made ringtones. You can go to the Freedom Fiends blog, top post.
We can't play them on the air.
We can't play them on the air, but, you know, it's the interwebs. You can go to the interwebs, the freedomfiends.com/blog. And there are two ringtones I made. They're 60-second long MP3s you can put on your phone. And they're free. And one is the whole freak
they're
out.
They're free like beer and free like speech.
Yes, free beer, free speech. Yes. And you can do whatever you want with them. You can remix them. There's two of them. One of them is, you know, ringtones are supposed to be 60 seconds long. So one of them is Mark's whole freak out, which was about 68 seconds long, but had some spaces in it where Ian's jaw was just dropped. So I edited that out, the spaces out. So it's 60 seconds long. And then another one, that's what went out on air. And there's a bunch of cussing in it and a bunch of screaming. And then I also made a loop of what Ian sent me, which was what he cut, which didn't go out on air, which I can't even say what it is, but it's a loop of it. And Mark and Ian responding to Mark saying it, this has become kind of a meme. There's already, let's see, Ian put up video of it. Somebody made a screen, made wallpaper of a picture, a screenshot of Mark just full freak out. Somebody made a GIF, an animated GIF
of him throwing the mic,
which pushing it. It's on a stand, but I said, drop the mic, I'm out, which people really liked. You know, it's kind of the radio equivalent of a rapper doing that. And it's just kind of taken on a life of its own. It's pretty special.
I've blamed it on the caffeine. Yeah. I'm starting the caffeine conspiracy theory.
Well, Mark has said many times that he is allergic to caffeine, where the tiniest amount of it makes him freak out.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. You found a screenshot of him storming out of the studio, and he's reaching to grab a soda can, and you circled it with a red, you know, circle and an arrow, and posted it. And I reminded everyone that Ben Stone has said people should ignore conspiracy theories that are based on blurry photos with red arrows added. And it's literally a blurry photo with a red arrow added.
I added it myself. I guarantee that arrow is authentic. Yeah. You're not the only one who said that. Someone said that on Facebook, too.
Was it Local Scrutinizer?
I don't know. Hang on a second. It was Local Scrutinizer. Is that you? Is that your secret name?
I'm not on Facebook, man.
Okay. You just have your tentacles in all of the social media.
it's one of my minions. Yeah.
Wait a minute. I recognize this photo. I know this cat.
I know this cat and microphone. Yeah. Busted. Yeah. Well, see, I left Facebook, and I don't hang out on there much. I don't even check it once every 4 days. But there is this app for Facebook called RSS Graffiti, which enables you to post from your RSS feed automatically to a page on there. So I had 3,500 friends on there, and I was very active on there, so-called friends, a couple years ago, and I left, and I was just like, it was too much of a time suck, and it was also, I wasn't interested in, you know, the bickering. And I wasn't interested in bickering with, you know, statists or other libertarians. It's useless. And mainly, I was really getting upset with Facebook's changing privacy policy. And this was like a year before the Snowden stuff came out. But it was like, I didn't like what they're doing. And I really don't like what it is now. It's basically like, you can have 1,000 friends on there and you post something, like 3 of them see it or something like that. But, you know, I just have an automated bot. And I had to have an account on there to do that. So I made a new account, which we're not going to say the name of again. But yeah, it's just a bot that posts on there. But, you know, when there's something that interests me, I'll go on there and chatter a little bit. Basically only in the Free Talk Live amplifiers only.
It's like a section. Periscope out of your submarine.
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking of periscopes out of our submarine, we're going to talk about 3 things today. We're going to talk about this cuss thing. We're going to talk about the movie Pontypool and the whole genre of zombie movies that take place in radio stations. There's at least 3 of them, and I would probably add a 4th, which is the video of Mark's freak out in the station tonight.
He caught the Pontypool virus.
And then we're going to talk about this amazing movie about radio called Pump Up the Volume. Yeah, which is great. I love it.
Which is great. I'd never heard of it, but I'm glad I've seen it now.
Yeah, it's one of Ian Freeman's favorite movies. We discussed it last night. And you know, if you're listening and you were harmed by this whole, you know, oh my God, like if you listen to the Free Talk Live thing and you're really worried and you feel like, you know, it reminds you of your parents fighting before they got divorced, because it did kind of. Somebody said it was the Real Housewives of Keene. yeah, if you're harmed by it and you need a unicorn chaser, you can listen to last night's Freedom Fiends, which was Derek J and Ian Freeman from Free Talk Live hanging out and having a great time with me and like no yelling at all. Interestingly, though, we foreshadowed this because at one point I said we should just talk about Mark for the whole next segment and how he freaks out every day. And
so it's your fault.
And Ian didn't want to do that. He's like, oh, he's not here to defend him. And I said, well, let's call him and wake him up. And they didn't want to do that. And I decided that Ian Freeman's animal wrestling name for the Freedom Fiends, since he was on for the night, was going to be the Granite Coot. And
what's a coot?
A coot is a bird that is native to New Hampshire. And it's also a crazy person who rants a lot, like, yeah, that old coot, you know, you kids get off my lawn. And Granite is, you know, New Hampshire is the Granite State. So I said he's the Granite Coot. And he kind of didn't, you know, he's like, yeah, yeah, well, whatever. And Derek immediately said, he said, Ian's not very coot like. I think Mark Edge should be the Granite Coot. So I think Mark Edge is the Granite Coot.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of like the all father of the Free State Project, though. He's like everybody looks up to him as sort of the wise elder of Free Talk Live.
Yeah. Well, the Stop Free Keene people say that he's a cult leader and he's like the Pied Piper leading the children to doom.
I thought Ian was the cult leader.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about, Ian. Oh, you're talking about Mark. What did you say?
Yeah,
about
Mark is the Mark is kind of the wise elder of Free Talk Live. And Ian is sort of the young rebel of Free Talk Live.
I think they're about the same age. Maybe it's just they a are. Personality.
It's
difference.
Just a personality thing.
You think Mark's the elder statesman of?
Yeah, he just comes off that way.
Yeah,
he's also the voice of reason. Like when they play good cop, bad cop, he's the good cop.
I don't know. So. I think the elder statesman of New Hampshire Liberty is that lefty anarchist that wears the boot on his head and runs for office.
Oh, Vermin Supreme?
Yeah, I think he's the elder statesman.
Yeah, maybe. He's maybe the elder wizard.
Hey, I got to play you something really quick. This guy who's starting a podcast in England, I've been helping him with it. He sent me a sample today. And
cool.
You got to hear the quality of this guy's voice. I can't wait to hear a show by Bernie. Check this out.
Yeah, my name is not Mac. My name is Bernie. And this is the Life, Liberty, and Property podcast. In fact, this is a test recording of the Life, Liberty, and Property podcast, made especially for Mr. Michael W. Dean, Freedom Fiend. And, that's about it for now, and there will be some more later. Goodbye.
Isn't that awesome? I can't wait to hear an hour of that guy talking liberty.
Yeah, that was great. He's saying proper tea, P-R-O-P-E-R-T-E-A.
Proper tea, like proper tea time.
To serve your tea properly.
Yes, yes. You know, kind of like DJ and I used to have a kink podcast called Submission and Coffee. You know, it's kind of those beverage-based podcasts. And there's a couple that have beer in the name. And yeah, it's English, so it's tea.
It's like Liberty on the Rocks.
Yeah, where you go get drunk in public and talk about liberty loudly at the table. The normals. Yeah, man, I'm gonna really looking forward to Bernie. Bernie has a site called imageconjurer.com. He's also got imageconjurer.bit. He's one of the few people who set up a mirror. He takes pictures of ladies, and they're tasteful and weird and scantily clad and kind of pinup style. We'll be back with more on the Freedom Fiends. I can't do it.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
Is the Freedom Fiends, the cuss-free alternative to those other libertarian voluntarist talk shows. Yeah, so that guy had the British guy played the excerpt of, do you know what the name of it, Life, Liberty, and Property, do you know what Life, Liberty, and Property is a reference to?
Well, it's Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Happiness, but Jefferson stole that from Adam Smith, I think.
John Locke. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a reference to John Locke, which is a very good thing to reference in a proper British libertarian podcast. This guy's been a friend of the Fiends for a long time, and I'm really, you know, it's kind of funny because that was one of the topics last night with Ian, was how Ian and I both like to help other people for free get set up doing podcasts. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's definitely got the voice for it.
He definitely does. He sounds like
I wish I had a British accent.
The two British guys in the Hubert Selby movie I made. It's like the whole movie is these like cranky old senile delinquent Brooklyn guys that hung out and shot dope with Cubby back in the 50s and 60s. And then in the middle of it, there's this 8-minute segment of two British guys who were his publisher for Last Exit to Brooklyn talking. And there was actually like in 1966, that book was declared obscene when they published it in London. And there it went all the way to the, you know, that thing they blow up in V for Vendetta. What's it called? That building.
The Parliament building.
Wasn't the Parliament. It's the it's where the High Court is. It's like their Supreme Court. It might be in the same building as the Parliament. But yeah, it went all the way to that. And it was actually declared not obscene. And like this company spent all their money fighting it, even though the fine was really small. As activism, they fought it in the courts all the way to the Supreme Court and won. And, you know, it's like the movie goes from these guys like all talking like, yeah, I was hanging out. But, you know, like I can't even do a Brooklyn accent, but it was like, you know, 75, 80 year old guys talking about hanging out with Cubby in the 50s and 60s with Selby. And then in the middle of it, it just stops. And we put in this like kind of masterpiece theater chamber music. And it's like, and yes, I was approached with the Hubert Selby manuscript in some time in 1965, and I was astonished at the brutality and realism of this vision of the underbelly of America. And it sounds just like the kind of cadence of this guy Bernie. I can't wait to hear a proper English. I hope there's some Macho Libertarian flash in it too. With that accent, it'd be amazing.
That'd be good. You know, there's some like really like it's kind of the British accent's kind of intoxicating. I just finished listening to an audiobook of Lord of the Flies read by the author, and the author's British. Mm-hmm. And there's not a lick of liberty in that whole book, but it's still like it's pleasant to listen to.
I think that book is used an example by a lot of people of what would happen without government.
Right. But I mean, the funny thing about it is everything that the kids do wrong is something they learned in boarding school. They jump up and down like we get to make the rules now, and they jump up and down all excited.
Yeah, they're just imitating the state, basically.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's like the author didn't even intend, like the author's intro, he says, I wanted to make clear how awful little boys are, but then he can't even like write that thought experiment out without attributing it to their training.
What a creepy motivation for a book. I want to show how horrible little boys are.
Man. That's what he said in the intro.
That guy's horrible. Yeah, I didn't really like that book or the movie. I've seen several versions of the movie. I do like Animal Farm, though. It's a good book by a different British author. Excellent. Yes. Yes. So we want to talk about you had a topic. What was it? Oh yeah,
well, Bitcoin economy. Lots of topics.
Bitcoin we're economy.
Somebody
we'll barrel through them, man.
Somebody sent me this article, and I just think it's such a funny headline. And it's from what is this thing called? I don't even know. But the headline is MIT is about to become the world's first Bitcoin economy. Which is so obtuse, it must be deliberate.
I mean, that reminds me of like, you know, I was playing in a punk rock band in, you know, 1983, and I was still like jumping on a dying bandwagon. And like 10 years after that, the mainstream media was like Green Day, the first punk rock band ever, you know?
Right. So this is VentureBeat, and it essentially looks like they're just sort of they're giving Bitcoin to the students, or somebody has a project where they're going to give Bitcoin to the students, and then they're going to show that they can use Bitcoin as a sort of an internal incentive program. But like to call it the world's first Bitcoin economy is absurd. Like there's been a Bitcoin economy for years. There's even been like physical Bitcoin economies. Like the Porkfest is a great example of like a whole marketplace where everything is available for Bitcoin.
Yeah, you had the first Bitcoin. You and your boys had the first Bitcoin vending machine, right?
Lamassu Bitcoin the Lamassu machine is what we call the first Bitcoin ATM, because it's the first machine where you can put cash in and get Bitcoin out.
Is that llama and, like the animal, and Sue like the girl's name?
No, Lamassu is actually like some sort of Sanskrit deity who's a protection of private property.
You know, your friend Sue who raises llamas. Yeah, it's Lamassu.
No, it's the protector of private property.
Here we go. Let's go buy some things.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone-proof.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com. This is the Freedom Fiends, the first namecoin economy in the world. Actually, that's almost true because if you search like we take namecoin, Freedom Fiends are about one of three things that show up. If you search we take Bitcoin, there are 3 million things that show up.
Freedom Fiends was definitely the world's first namecoin economy in my office.
Yeah. So do you want to talk more about these bad llamas? You got more on them?
The MIT thing?
Yeah, you got more dirt on them. You know,
it's just ridiculous. I'm reading this article, and it's this student who says, I was laying awake at night, and I was brainstorming ideas, and then it came to me. And his idea is to give all the students some Bitcoin and get the professors involved to sort of analyze how people use it, like if everybody in the community has it, what happens. And then he says, well, we're trying to see what kind of an ecosystem emerges. And he says, this is the first time that an entire community has been so empowered as to have everyone understand Bitcoin. And it's like, this is not even remotely true. I don't understand how this guy could even think this.
And the free market will bash him down. He'll say, he'll get invited to some Bitcoin conference or sent there by school stolen tax money. And he'll spout that. And, somebody we know will probably just laugh in his face. The thing is, though, too, like academia is such a closed world that he probably believes that. He probably believes that he is the only one who's ever done it.
Start a campaign to fight economic illiteracy in American universities.
The funny thing is, too, is like MIT has been first or instrumental in so many important things that it's kind of undermining that by some, newly minted freshman engineer claiming that he invented something. I mean, the internet was basically invented so like acid heads at MIT could text chat with acid heads at Stanford, wasn't it?
Well, that was one of the early tools. I don't know if that was the explicit purpose of it.
Draft dodgers who were getting out of the Vietnam War by staying home and, helping do rocket science for the military.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Their brains were needed for the war effort.
they had to draw blueprints for the drone program that would come someday.
I would just like people to go to this website and in the comments section say something to the effect of "You're out of your mind."
Yeah. The drone program, there is a theory that's probably true that the things that we're seeing and believed to be UFOs in New Mexico in the 50s, where's that, Roswell? That it was actually experimental aircraft that were paving the way for drones, because a bunch of people reported seeing, lights in the sky moving in ways that aircraft could not. Mm-hmm. And that was probably experimental aircraft that led to the drone program. And there was a lot of work done on the drone program at Area 51. And, because it's the most secret part of the military or the most secret area. And also there's a theory about the alien autopsy. There's a doctor who said or a nurse that said she helped a doctor perform an autopsy on aliens. And what it was, the theory is that it was, it was an experimental Air Force jet with a couple pilots in it that crashed and just burned horribly. And what was left was like charred bodies with, aircraft helmets melted into the skull. So it kind of looked like the bulbous, bald, gray alien that everyone knows. And they didn't tell her what the doctor was autopsying. And she was just crazy and believed that it was aliens.
Or maybe they fed her a bunch of LSD before she did it so that she could be talked out of remembering it later.
So speaking of crazy people, I just got this in the mail today. It's the 2014 Republican Platform Survey. I used to be a registered Republican back when I liked Ron, I still like Ron Paul, back when I thought, the government could work with him, with the right men in there. But I'm not a registered voter anymore. If you don't vote in Wyoming, they take you off the rolls. But the GOP, Reince Priebus from D.C. is still sending me this thing. And it's really disgusting because it's it's basically a survey of how you want the candidate they speak to spin his language. It's obviously not, if you're into this and this and this, we'll run a guy who's like that. No, they already pick who they're going to run.
We're crowdsourcing our lies through the post office.
Yeah, yeah. And how much attention do you feel Republican candidates should give to the following issues? Strengthening border security, very important, somewhat important, not important. Defending our constitutional freedoms, reducing federal spending, keeping taxes low, exposing Obama's radical left-wing politics, repealing and replacing Obamacare, expanding domestic exploration for oil and gas, stimulating job creation in the private sector, keeping our military strong and well-prepared, fighting against amnesty for illegal immigrants. Those are the only choices. And it's interesting because some of these things contradict other things, like keeping taxes low does not go with keeping our military strong and well-prepared, stimulating job creation, fighting amnesty, blah, blah, blah. All this
those
stuff.
Are all things you have to tax people to do.
Yeah. Stupid politicians. And
well, I mean, that is the central lie of any sort of democracy is we're going to give you more and charge you less.
Yeah. Whereas,
which is funny because that's what the market actually does.
The platform of every politician other than Ron Paul should be vote for me, more taxes and less freedom.
Well, if there were truth in advertising laws that applied to political campaigns, then they would say something like that.
Yeah, there's not. There are with what you can say on the air, but it's how you say it, not the content behind it.
Right.
You have to lie properly.
Hopefully they have a class on that at Harvard or something.
MIT.
At MIT. The world's first lying. It's the proper lying.
Well, yeah, they could. You know, I was thinking that they should use the Bitcoin BS generator to help pump up that article about MIT having the first Bitcoin economy.
Well, maybe, you know, if they pay their writers by the word, then absolutely.
Well, it only puts together three phrases at a time. But, you know, I think that article would be a lot better if it said morph attacker-proof multi-sigs, deploy offline miners, target volatile hash rates, transition private sector nodes, exchange merged verifications, and productize transparent cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, I have no idea what you just said.
And facilitate high-difficulty dust transactions.
You know, I think I would like to see MIT or at least this VentureBeat website prove that this article was not written with such a generator.
Well, the problem is you'd need some kind of advanced Turing test, you know, for printed word for that. And you know who's in charge? You know who's the leader, a leading institution of developing AI?
Is it MIT?
It is. Yeah.
So who Turing's the Turingers?
Who will Turing the Turingers? There's a button for you. You're going to end up with so many button ideas on this show that you're just going to like, you're going to be making one use buttons. You know, you'll be like, hey, Krizzle, I want one of each of these 1,000 designs.
Well, he can do that as long as it's multiples of 30, he can absolutely do that.
It doesn't cost any more. Well, it wouldn't cost, you know, cause he does them 30 up on a sheet and then cuts them out and makes them, but you could have 30 different designs on one sheet.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's not like offset printing where you need to, you know, make a metal plate for each.
You know, that should really be the goal. Once we hit 30 buttons, it should be a set and we should just be able to send it to Krizzle and say, hey, here's another order for 30 buttons.
Yeah. Although I think some
are going to wear them out.
I think some are going to be a lot more popular than others. Oh, we're going to wear out someone in the free market by giving them too much work. Yes. They will sue us.
They'll have to hire someone.
Yeah. Krizzle. Or he'll just have to take 5 days to make and ship orders and get them to your house rather than 3 days.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah, I've never had any problem with time or anything. He turns stuff right around.
I did once, and it was, you know, it generally it's a week turnaround from ordering it to getting it in my hand for the buttons. One time it took me 3 weeks, and it was still within, you know, that's what most people would do, and it still didn't ruin me. But it was...
Does he have a website? We should be giving him some love if we're going to talk about so much.
Really hard to look at. It just search Krizzle's buttons.
Just search for it.
Search Krizzle's buttons. Yeah. Because it's not, I don't know.
He doesn't have krizzlesbuttons.com. He has krizzlesbuttons.ecreator.com.
That's why I said just Google it.
Yeah, just go Google it.
Tell him that the Freedom Fiends and Davi DeBarker sent you. Davi DeBarker sent you.
The shiny badger
sent you. Yeah. And, but the reason he took 3 weeks one time was right before the Super Bowl, and he had this massive demand for some button he'd made that was like the Super Pot Bowl or something.
I remember that. It was because the Super Bowl was in the same town that had just legalized marijuana or something like that, right?
Yep.
I don't follow football enough to know where that was.
Yeah, and he makes buttons for other people, but he also makes buttons and then sells them with his designs, and that one just like, I don't know, he got an order for 50,000 or something.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's happened to me a couple of times. I've had like people call in and say, hey, I need 1,000 of that to bring to my meetup or whatever. And I'll be like, okay, but it's going to take me a few weeks.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Worms. So let's talk about Pontius Pilate. What's it called?
Pontypool.
Pontypool. Yeah. So spoiler alert, we're going to talk about movies and we're going to give away the endings because we can't really talk about them without giving away. It was interesting to me that this movie, like 10 minutes into it, I was like, you know, this movie reminds me of like a movie update from Canada of the old radio play War of the Worlds. And I told you that when I was done and you were like, yeah, the movie was originally a radio play. And
yeah,
I'm pretty good at pegging that. Like a lot of times I can tell movies that were adapted from a stage play because they usually take place in one location and only have three or four characters, which this also did. But
yeah,
this also, like, I realized, you know, 30 minutes into it, like the video isn't that important. The video was great. It was, the actors were great. And most of it was just reacting really well.
Yeah. It's like the radio host is sort of like zooming in on his mic and he's listening really intently. And you're just hearing these sounds kind of come over the radio from people who are calling a station. And it's all like Mind's Eye Theater. There's like very little gore in the movie because yeah, everything is about callers.
Well, I don't like zombie movies in general. I don't think I've ever seen a whole one, but I've seen part of about a dozen of them. And I just really, I don't like the violence, and like, zombies make me sad. They don't make me laugh usually because, you know, it's kind of like a human in some horrible state that doesn't seem fun. And I have compassion for humans and that makes me sad.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't like the trend of zombies being used for funny. I think that it should be tragic or scary or suspenseful. I think it should be serious.
Pontypool had some funny moments.
Well, yeah, it did.
I was disappointed with the ending, which, you know, it's the ending is what's called, you know, the term God in the basket, you know, just
the feds showed up is the ending.
Yeah, just they got bombed by the government and it's dead. They're dead and it's over. So that seemed like a cop out to me. We'll have more about Pontypool and movies and filmmaking and storytelling when we get back from the market. Feinsteining.
You were destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to spy on you and keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially do not want you to torrent
Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
Here we are, late night. Yeah. So I did a show with Ian last night and Derek. It was like, Derek lives above Ian now in the same house, and Derek was calling in for the show and his internets are really bad and he was wireless, and I was like, why don't you just go downstairs, there's a radio studio directly below you. And he went down there and Ian helped him get connected. And then Ian was like, Ian's great radio, but he didn't play along very much with the Freedom Fiends fun stuff. Like, he was like, yeah, whatever, that's cool. But, you know, like, you can't get him to get really excited about, like, what's your wrestling name going to be? And, you know, when you go like, hey, this is Michael Dean Late Night, I kind of get the feeling he's going like, just do the radio, Michael. Don't be that way.
Maybe he's not. He's too serious.
He's not
too serious for the Freedom
he's
Fiends.
He's not too serious in general. But yeah, it was like Derek is more, you know, Derek's the warrant canary. He's goofy. He's good on it. It worked.
You know, that's funny because in the activist world, Ian can totally get behind antics and funny yeah, names and capes and masks. And like, he eats that stuff up when it's out in the world.
Yeah. He needs to watch more zombie movies about talk radio hosts. And there is a genre. We decided we named two of them. And I said, well, if there's three, there's a genre. So there's Pontypool, there's Dead Air, and then there's what else?
there's Day of the Dead. There's a whole sequence in Day of the Dead that takes place in a radio station, and one of the main survivors in the show is the host of the radio show.
Yeah, and then there's Mark's the video of Mark's freak out, and we do think he's infected with the caffeine zombie virus.
Yeah, there's no radio host or radio station, but in the original Night of the Living Dead, fighting over the radio was a big deal because it was everyone's only source of information outside the house, and some of the sort of the broadcasts of the radio from that movie are kind of like classic. Like they were part of what made that movie so cool.
Same thing's true of Red Dawn, which in its own kind of way is kind of a zombie movie because, you know, it's something invading from the outside and taking over your town, and it becomes, you know, the end of the world where you have to shoot it out. Mm-hmm. And there's radio broadcasts in there that are kind of like, you know, it's like freedom radio somewhere, you know, they're playing music and then the lady will come on and say, John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. And it's code for like the resistance fighters. It's kind of like it's a riff on stuff that happened in World War II, like Radio Free America broadcasting into communist, you know, the Nazi area, into Germany. Yeah, that's what it's called.
You know, there's another one. There's a movie that is not actually about zombies. It's about aliens, but it is sort of put into the zombie genre lists because it has the same aesthetic where there's this sort of invading thing that's eating everybody. And in that, the aliens are sort of run on this sort of energy and it turns out that a Faraday cage is the only way to protect yourself from them. And so there's a pirate radio host who becomes the like primary survivor and the builder of Faraday cages that lets them defend themselves from this Indian. So there are aliens. And so
that's racist.
So there's even there, it's not quite a zombie movie, but there is a definite sort of overlap with radio.
Yeah, well, radio is often important in movies before the internet. It's not so much anymore because there's the internet. But, you know, like the movie we're going to talk about later, Pump Up the Volume, which, you know, radio changes the world in one town. And that movie is from 1990, right? So there's actually a Disney movie from about the year 2000 or maybe even more recent than that. It's kind of the same movie. It's kind of ripped off.
Is it Rebel Radio?
Yeah. And it's about a girl who has an internet radio show, you know? So,
okay.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of shows anymore where radio is the theme because radio seems like the ballywick of old people, and those aren't.
You know, video didn't kill the radio star. Video enshrined the radio star, I think.
Yeah, yeah, they're still radio stars. And, you know, I mean, the word radio is used for everything that's spoken or even music. You know, like, people say, yeah, check out my radio show, and they send me a link, and I'm like, that's internet radio. You don't have a radio show. I have a radio show. We'll be back with more of this radio show on one station when we get back. People used to do only radio shows in one station. It wasn't syndicated.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow
worms. I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
È stato sperimentato.
The United States government presents
no vision.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Esto por su parte considera
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Hour two of the Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean, the Shiny Lobster, and Davy Barker, the furry vampire zombie. That's not right.
The Iron Zombie.
I'm the Iron Hamster, and you're the Shiny Badger. So we're talking about this show, Pontypool, this movie. You know, I call everything a show because, and Derek J was like, didn't get this when I called Pump Up the Volume. Yeah, it's a really good show. Show is film industry talk for any piece of video. You know, like when you take your documentary film into the post-production facility, you call them up and ask them how much it's going to cost. They're like, well, how long is your show? You know, it's just a term for anything. So I
know it works. You know, the show must go on.
Yeah,
is an expression. Yeah. Or, you know, I'm going to a movie showing is an expression. So.
Or we have a barn. Let's put on a show. Do you know that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was an early Hollywood, like before Hollywood was big business. It was like the filmmaking industry. That was kind of their motto. Like, we have a barn, let's put on a show. You know, it was back when the early movie industry was kind of like what's that term? Oh, mercenary video. No, what's the term for guerrilla filmmaking? It was kind of guerrilla filmmaking back then.
I like it. I think show works for everything.
Yep. So Pontypool, let's talk about that show, that movie.
So it's interesting. I think it defies genre because it is zombie. It is sort of zombies in the sense that it's like people are going crazy and they're attacking and eating each other and that. But it's not a virus and it's not a UFO and it's not
it's a virus.
It's a word virus, which I think is so interesting. It's a disease that is transmitted through infectious language.
That's what we're spreading on this show.
Right. Hey, you know, that kind of plays into Pump Up the Volume too, because the sign or the slogan was "Truth is a virus."
It was also Talk Hard.
Talk Hard.
Talk Hard, which is way before Walk Hard, which is also a good movie.
Language is a virus. I mean, that's what memes are about, right?
Yeah.
So this is the only movie I know of that actually plays with the idea of language is a virus.
Well, Pump Up the Volume kind of does too, because at the end, and this is another spoiler alert, but that's the kind of thorough reviews you get on here. We cover the whole movie. And, you know, just you should just know if you're listening to this show, spoiler alert, you know, reality ahead, truth ahead. So at the end of that movie, you know, he ends up in cuffs, but his, you know, all of a sudden, as the credits are rolling, you hear all these voices of all these other teenage pirate stations around the country that started because of him.
Yeah, it's
he spread like a virus.
It's an infectious radio show.
I wonder how many people went out and started a pirate radio station because of that.
Well, I don't know. Did you? Was this part of your inspiration to become a radio personality?
No, I saw this movie for the first time yesterday.
Pump Up the Volume?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
And I wanted to be on radio since about 1970. That was when I started planning being on radio, when I was about 6. Now, maybe 8, so like 1972.
I would say Private Parts by Howard Stern played a role in me being interested in radio.
I watched that movie after I signed the affiliate agreement with GCN and before we got our show. Like, I was just itching to get on the radio. I knew I was going to have a radio show. And I went and watched everything I could find on radio. And I'd seen that one many years earlier, but I saw it again. That movie's, it's pretty good. And it's very hero's journey, which most biopics are, you know, biographical pictures, you know, they call them biopics.
Yeah.
They always wrap it heavily around the hero's journey.
Sure. Well, I guess I'm talking about the book. I read Howard Stern's books when I was a teenager, and it didn't necessarily make me think radio exactly, but it made me know that I wanted to be a public persona of some kind. And so I've tried a number of venues to that degree.
I read the same. I didn't do that. I read the stuff that Howard Stern would have read as a kid, which is actually the stuff that the guy in Pump Up the Volume read. He was returning a book to the library when he met the girl, you know, the love interest.
Yeah,
and the book was Lenny Bruce's How to Talk Dirty and Influence People.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I love book drops like that. That's fantastic.
The cultural references in that were great. The like they showed some of the music he played. You know, he played Leonard Cohen and he played, you know, the Circle Jerks or Descendants. It was, you know, a lot of punk rock. But they showed his like tape collection at one point and it looked like my tape collection. It's also he had Bad Brains and all sorts of good old 90s stuff. 80s and 90s stuff. But
that, he looked like such a square when he went to school. That was the funny thing.
He looked like a hip square though. He's wearing like a bowling shirt, you know, and but yeah, and that movie also had some of the best music I've ever heard in a teen angst movie. You know, usually it's like whatever they're pushing by the record company that's owned by the company that made the movie. And this was not that case. They played, you know, they had him playing stuff that had like no commercial potential.
I wonder if that's a licensing issue. I bet it is.
It's not a licensing issue. It's a make more money for us issue. Often, almost
like product placement.
Almost invariably, yeah. You know, if you go see a Warner Brothers film, most of the music in there is going to be licensed to Warner Chapel Publishing. They won't necessarily be Warner Brothers artists, but it's all about the publishing at that point.
Okay.
Yeah, so back to Pontypool.
So it's funny because it's like it's infectious. So first off, you're dealing with a bilingual culture. And so there's these parts of the movie that are in French because apparently English is the infectious language and French is not.
I have a theory about that.
Okay, what is it?
Canada... there's a lot of countries that have had incentives from the government to make film because Hollywood dominated film for so long that England, basically anything that was English, you know, protectorate, England, Australia, and Canada all have had or have government financing to make independent movies. And Canada is still really, really big on it. And one of the things that gets you the funding in Canada is having part of the film in French because it's legally a bilingual country. And, you know, they say that the difference between a dialect and a language is a language is a dialect with an army, which I think is hilarious and very true.
Language is a dialect with an army.
Yeah,
I could see that. I think linguistically speaking, the difference is that it has its own grammar.
Well, no, I think the difference is, I mean, you know, when people say English first, we must have Americans speak English, you know, that kind of stuff.
Cultural Marxism.
Yeah, I mean, really, what they're saying is ignore the free market and use the guns of the government, use the army or the police or the law to enforce how the free market doesn't work of language.
That was one of the laugh out loud funny parts of the movie for me is when they're getting the warning from the government about this virus and it's coming in French and they're translating it over the air. And then the last line of the emergency broadcast is warning, do not translate this message.
Yeah. No, but I would not be surprised if someone in Canada who has some purse strings, either the government or some private, you know, Quebecois separatist billionaire or something, gave them money to make that movie where not only there's some French in it, but to where English carries the virus only.
Yeah. I think there's a hero's journey in Pontypool too. I think it's pretty subtle because it's not the main plot, but it is about, it's about him accepting love.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the movie, it's sort of like he's this sort of dejected guy with this ex-wife that he's bitter about. And, by the end, he's sort of like, there's a romantic interest in his producer. And so that is the hero's journey, even though it's not part of the plot. That is the character's transition, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's a character arc, which is related to but not necessarily overlapping a hero's journey. You can have one without the other.
Well, it's hard to go away and come back when there's only one set.
Yeah, well, there's a really – and what's the moral of the story? He finds love and then he gets blown up by the government.
Gets blown up by the government. Yeah. That's the moral of the story.
There's actually a really succinct – summary of the hero's journey in a series of insults hurled by the baby at the dog in Family Guy.
When Brian is talking about the book he wants to write, his novel.
And he's like,
and Stewie's like, oh, is this what happens?
The dog's working on a novel forever. He calls himself a novelist, but he really hasn't written much. And he's been doing this for years. And the baby says, oh, how's that novel coming, Brian? Is it, you got some pages? Yeah. You got some pages in a drawer somewhere? Yeah. Okay. What happens? Do you have some characters and they have something they have to overcome and they have obstacles and they learn lessons? And the end of that rant, it's really long and just bitter and mean and right on. But the end of it is, So what? How does it go? You have friends become enemies, enemies become friends, everyone's a little richer for the experience. And that is the hero's journey. And DJ and I say that all the time when we see a movie that's really cheesy with the hero's journey. We look at each other and we go, friends become enemies, enemies become friends, everyone's a little richer for the experience. And it's pretty much almost every Hollywood movie has some friends at the beginning who are enemies by the end of it, some enemies at the beginning who are friends by the end of it, and everyone's a little richer for the experience.
Well, that is definitely what's going on with him and his producer. They're enemies at the beginning, they're friends at the end, and everyone is a little richer if you believe the broken window fallacy.
Because the government's bombing everything. Well, I would also say that he's a little richer in his life for having found love, and then he dies. So he dies having known love
again. Yeah, that's
again,
true.
You know?
Yeah.
I'd rather live and still be working on it myself. You know, I don't think it's a happy ending to learn a life lesson and then die at 50, you know, like he does.
Drama does like to teach people their life lessons on their deathbed. I don't know what that's about, but it does seem like that's a common motif.
Well, it kind of seems related to religion of, you know, you have to get right with God and your fellow man before you die. Like, I actually kind of made some amends to my mother on her deathbed over the phone. I wasn't even there. She died pretty suddenly. And my sister held the phone up to her, and I said some things to her that I needed to say that I should have said, that I'd meant to say and put off, and it was good. Yeah.
Good.
Yep. Yep.
But, you know, that was, you know, not to disparage the experience, but I imagine that you carried that experience longer than she did.
I'm a little richer for the experience.
Yeah.
She was in a coma.
That's rough.
I didn't mention that part. I mean, but, you know, people in comas can hear things, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no firsthand experience of that, but, you know, people say that.
Yeah, so Pontypool. I really love the look of the movie, and I could tell that it's shot with the Red camera, which a lot of TV shows are now. The Red brand camera is a camera system that's like, it's about $70,000 for the camera and the lenses, but you can rent it for like a week for like $2,000. And that's how a lot of independent movies get made now. Like, basically people who've cut their teeth on, you know, DV and cheap high def and learn to make film, you know, they get a good script, they get some good actors, they rent a Red camera and they film the whole thing in a week and then edit it. And it's just like, it looks stunning. And that's what that movie shot on. It's what like House of Cards is shot on. A lot of major movies.
Worms.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and yes, we're broadcasting this message into space.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Yes, Dobby, Peep Show is a TV show. It's a BBC TV show that I rather like, and I was going to tell you about a funny zombie thing in it that's in really bad taste.
Well, you know, zombies usually taste bad, so...
Well, I don't even know if this is a zombie thing, but there's a scene where there's this guy, Mark, who's... It's kind of like The Odd Couple in England, if the, you know, sloppy guy in The Odd Couple, instead of being a sports journalist, was a bedroom DJ who does lots of ecstasy.
Okay.
But the kind of conservative guy of the two is really depressed because he broke up with his girlfriend. So he goes to like a laser tag place. He skips work and goes to play laser tag. And, you know, you're wearing these outfits where if you shoot with the laser pistol, you know, it hits a sensor and it says they're dead or whatever. And he's walking around. He comes around the corner in this darkened, you know, course they have in this building. And it's like, 8-year-old kid is standing in front of him and he shoots him and he's like, "You're dead, kid." And he thinks to himself, "This is probably what it'll be like when society collapses. I'll be walking around shooting children out of depression."
Okay.
That's a lot of story without a lot of payoff. So let's go back to Pontypool.
But there was something you wanted to say.
You should watch Peep Show, I was going to say.
I'll find it online somewhere.
Okay, I was going to say what?
You said you were going to say something about zombies. I don't remember what it was.
I was going to say...
probably because you didn't say it yet.
I was going to say, welcome back to the living experiment that is Michael Dean 6 days a week live on radio. It's kind of difficult sometimes, but I'm loving it. The commitment is kind of hard, but it's like once I'm on, I'm always happy and I don't want it to end. I kind of wish it were a 3-hour show and maybe someday it will be. Who knows? That's not what I was going to say, though, about Pontypool, was it?
I don't know. You didn't say it yet.
I was going to say why young filmmakers, aspiring filmmakers, right, should make a zombie movie.
Yeah, why is that?
Okay, the easiest kind of movie to make if you're a new filmmaker and have no money and no experience is a documentary, because you don't need actors, and pretty much anybody who's passionate about a subject can be entertaining and engaging about it for a couple minutes on film. If you film them for an hour talking about something they love or hate, you'll be able to get 3 minutes of each person that's usable. It doesn't matter if they're good looking in a documentary. Often, like, you know, the experts are like the cranky old people that, you know, look
evidenced
like
by the aliens guy with that crazy haircut.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's the easiest kind of film to make. The second easiest kind of film to make is a zombie movie. The hardest kind of film to make is an actual drama that takes place in reality. Now, the reason...
Oh, man. Okay.
Because you need better actors and, you know, you can't hide behind... Zombie movies, here's the thing. To enjoy a zombie movie, you have to walk in the door with an incredible amount of suspension of disbelief. So you're already kind of in a state of like, yeah, okay, I accept that the undead walk the earth and feast on humans. So
right,
you're already prepared for like... You know, and the acting doesn't have to be believable so much as like even like bad acting. If it's kind of over the top, it can be interesting. And a lot of the acting in zombie movies is either acting like a zombie, which doesn't require much or any dialogue. And the rest of the acting is largely reacting to the fact that the undead are walking the earth and trying to feast on you. So a lot, if you can scream and look shocked and scared, you know, that's a lot easier than actually delivering a soliloquy, like a, you know, stunning performance like a good actor can.
So I want to completely disagree with you 180 degrees.
I knew you would. I think zombie movies are high art.
Because I'm a connoisseur of zombie movies, and YouTube is covered in terrible zombie movies that I can't even sit through.
Amateur or studio productions?
Like amateur, but I mean sort of mid-budget. But so here's the thing. Zombie movies are an easy thing to do because they're low budget, right? But the best zombie movies are human dramas. They're about the survivors, not about the zombies. So yes, every aspiring film student should try and do a zombie movie, but they're not going to do a good zombie movie unless they can also do a good drama.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. You have to be able to, you know, it involves writing, it involves story. Now that was, like I said, that was one of my complaints about Pontypool, is that it did not have a great story or much story at all. It had really good acting, especially the main character, the guy. He was really good. The two women were really good. He was stunning. The two women were pretty good.
Doctor was kind of funny.
Was he speaking German?
I think he was supposed to be German. I think that
but
was
he
the
had
accent.
He had a Spanish last name.
Did he?
Yeah.
I don't know. Weird. But no, he was speaking French when he was not speaking English.
Okay.
I think.
But he had a German accent.
But well, see, here's the thing. Pontypool is a great example. It's a zombie film, but it distinguishes itself partly because of the performance, but also because it's a unique idea. It's not just another group of townspeople sieging the farmhouse, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which, who invented that? What was the first zombie movie?
Night of the Living Dead.
That's what I thought, which you just described the plot of. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today. Please bear with us if you hear any audio dropouts. I'm trying an experiment. Someone suggested that maybe it wasn't that my modem's fried, it's that I have my wireless phone base unit, cordless phone base unit, on the table right above the wireless router. And I am wired on the computer I'm using to speak to you all on and speak to Davi on. But it still could mess with it. And I've had it unplugged the whole show, and we've had no audio dropouts. And I plugged it back in before the last break, and I just heard a kind of big dropout from Davi during the break. So maybe you're going to hear some more. And if that's true, I'm going to have to just move my phone elsewhere. And
speaking of dropouts, we should talk about Pump Up the Volume.
Yeah, nice segue, man. Did you listen to last night's Freedom Fiends?
No, not yet.
I was praising you and talking about how great you're getting on radio and how improved you are, and how through my tutelage and your experience of just doing it a lot, you've gotten really good. And I actually talked about how horrible you were doing interviews a long time ago.
Yeah, I can't listen to my first interview on Anarchy Gumbo. It's too painful.
Yeah, it really is, man. I would have had a better show if I'd had my cat in the other seat.
Well, you probably did.
But you're good, man. And that was a good segue. So I'm not going to blow it. Let's talk about Pump Up the Volume. Who's in it and what kind of movie is it?
It's Christian Slater, and it's a teen angst movie about radio. it's almost like Footloose or something like that.
With pirate punk rock radio.
Right.
Instead of
it's kind of like
disco.
Footloose meets Anarchist Cookbook. Did you ever see Anarchist Cookbook?
The actual book or the
no
book?
The movie. There's a movie that's based on the book. No. Anyway, it's a young kid who's new to a town and he can't make any friends, so he does late night pirate radio.
You're talking about Pump Up the Volume.
Now I'm talking about Pump Up.
Yeah,
the
he
volume.
Transforms the town. Yeah, and it's and you know, again, spoiler alert, but literally, I knew the whole plot of this movie by looking at the movie poster. I'm like, oh, Christian Slater, teen angst movie, pirate radio. Here's what's going to happen. He's going to be a weird loner who can only talk to the world through the radio, and nobody knows who he is, and he finally meets a girl and comes out of his shell a little bit, and then transforms the town, and everybody...
Enemies become friends, friends become enemies.
Yeah, everybody rebels, and then he has a battle in the innermost chamber with the school administration, and then the FCC... And then somehow, yeah, everyone's a little richer for the experience. And that's exactly the plot of this movie, but it's more about the execution.
Yeah, it's also he liberates the town and then the town liberates him. It's really interesting because once the listeners to his show kind of like rebel and strike out, he's like, whoa, this has gone too far. And they have to kind of drag him along with the revolution with them.
Yeah, I do that all the time. Like, you know, I feel like I've gone too far on radio and want to quit. And then I come back. My wife talks to me. My wife's the love interest in my movie. And she talks me into coming back.
I like the technology, too. It's cool to see like cassette tapes. I kind of feel like punks of today, like the millennials, they really ought to go and watch this movie and watch movies like it to sort of see what their intellectual heritage is.
Yeah. Cassettes, it's pretty bizarre to me that there are a lot of people who've never seen a cassette or held one or owned one. I mean, they've probably seen one, but they probably haven't owned one. And, you know, I'm not saying that they've really missed out on anything, but I really like that in my life I've gone from mastering all the analog media to doing the same thing in digital. You know, it's like I did recordings on 24 track tape in studios. I, you know, did radio. I'm back to radio, but you know, cassette tapes, you know, photography in a dark room with chemicals, filmmaking Super 8, you know, where you had to get it developed, all of that. I did all of that before I ever touched a computer or, you know, owned a computer.
I think this is Seth Green's first movie, too.
Is he in it?
Yeah, he's in it. He's the guy who hijacks the school's PA system.
Oh. Now, Seth Green was in a movie when he was 9.
Oh, well, then
I forget what it is. But, yeah, there's actually a reference to that in the movie Entourage. In Entourage, in the TV show Entourage, Seth Green plays Seth Green, and he plays, like, a really dicky version of himself. I don't know if he's really dicky in real life, but he's really dicky in Entourage, and in it, somebody says something like, you know, some manager says, oh, you can't touch him. I mean, he doesn't seem like a somebody, but, you know, he's been in the movie industry since he was 9. And I looked up his IMDb and he actually has been.
Wow.
Robert Downey Jr. was in a movie when he was like 7. His dad, Robert Downey Sr., was a filmmaker and made a film that he is in. He's playing a puppy in it.
Wow, I stand corrected. It was his 9th movie.
What's his first movie, Seth Green's?
Billions for Boris. He plays Benjamin Ape Face Andrews. I don't know what that is. It doesn't even have a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I think growing up on TV really messes you up, or growing up in front of the camera. I knew somebody who was a child actress who was in a bunch of Hollywood films. And she's a mess. She was a mess.
I don't want to say Miley Cyrus, but I'm going to say Miley Cyrus.
No, I'm not going to say who. I'll tell you who later, but you know, somebody might send it to her and I don't want her to know. I don't want to say, you know, bad things about her because she's probably still a mess and it's not her fault because her mother was a pushy stage mother and pushed her into being in Disney films when she was a kid. No, she's not somebody whose name you'd know, but you'd know a movie she's in if I said them. Repo Man. Sorry.
I just meant Miley Cyrus as an example of somebody who grew up in show business and turned into some sort of crazy narcissist monster.
I thought you were guessing I was friends with Miley Cyrus.
No, that would be strange.
It would. Talk for a second. I'm going to unplug the phone.
All right. I'm going to talk for a second. Something I thought was really cool about Pump Up the Volume was in the climax, spoiler alert, he avoids the FCC machine by moving his transmitter. And I feel like that's something that Ben Stone talked about in his Beyond Civil Disobedience thing, like things that people can do.
Well, that's not uncommon for pirate radio to be broadcast from a moving vehicle. It makes it a lot harder to locate with triangulation, which, you know, remember in Pump Up the Volume, the FCC came out with 3 vans and were driving around town with radio transmitters. And that is literally how you find pirate radio.
Yeah. It's so funny, too, like how clear there are things in this movie that I feel like you couldn't do in movies now. Like, there's some just very clear anti-authoritarian stuff. There's some language. Even though it's not, like, that vulgar, I don't feel like people say this stuff in movies anymore.
You couldn't. I mean, his radio name was Harry Hardon.
It was Horny Harry.
Horny
was
Harry Hardon. And then
it was HHH, and it's because it was also the initials of the school.
Oh, I didn't get that. Hubert Humphrey High. Yeah. He also went by Hard Harry, which I thought was a better radio name. It was a less of a Beavis and Butthead radio name. But,
you know, I love the FCC guy. Oh, he must have a mobile transmitter. Pull over everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah, it was extremely anti-authoritarian, and it was a major studio movie. You know, there's a lot of movies you couldn't make now. You could not make Fight Club now. You couldn't make a movie where, you know.
That's recent.
That's like 20 years old, man. You couldn't make a movie post 9/11 where the heroes are sexy guys blowing things up.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it is very, the climax of Fight Club is very 9/11. It's two towers going down.
Yep. Yep. And let's see, you couldn't make, I don't think you could make Pump Up the Volume. It's too,
you couldn't make like a You Got Mail update version of of Pump Up the Volume, like an internet radio.
Well, yeah, because Disney did, and it was really tame. It was like, she's not breaking the law. She's not breaking the law. This hero breaks the law. Now, does he get arrested at the end? I forget.
Yeah, I think that he does.
Yeah, but you know, he probably gets a slap on the wrist and he changes the world, which is not the message that Hollywood sends kids now.
It's Happy Harry Hard-On.
There you go. I didn't get that it's the same initials as the school. Did they make a reference? Yeah,
because that was some of the graffiti they were doing on campus, was when they had the HHH stuff up on posters at school, they were writing it out under the H's.
I kind of watch movies and multitask. I was probably like answering my fan mail or something.
We talked about Easter eggs last time. I eat that stuff up because I used to do set design. And so I'm always looking for like the continuity in the background of sets and stuff like that.
Where did you do set design? For what?
It was a movie called The Last. It was a vampire movie that I worked on it in college, and I did set design and I did script editing and I did continuity, which meant that I like walked around the set and made sure the props all started in the same place every take.
Before I watch a film, I often go on IMDb and look at the goofs to look for the goofs.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like where somebody has a watch on one hand and then it's on the other hand in the same scene, or...
Oh, it's terrible. You get people where like the tattoo goes from one arm to the other and you're like, how did the costume director not pick up that they were putting the tattoo on the wrong arm?
Yeah. And, you know, a really common one is the boom mic visible in the top of the frame.
Yeah. I think people just like, they let it slide because they assume the audience will think it's like a lampshade or something.
Well, the thing is though, a lot of times... If it happens and you don't notice it on the set, you can creatively crop the film to avoid it being in there. But a lot of times it's like, that's not really a priority. Getting the film done is a priority. But you'd be surprised that in some big, big budget Hollywood films, you can see, like, sometimes there's like, you can see, you know, Teamsters over in the corner, like, you know, and it's a period piece from the 1860s. And you see like,
there's the guy with the mullet,
the guy with the mullet and the baseball hat over on the side of the screen. Yeah.
No, I think the worst consequences in this film was his girlfriend got expelled and the only sympathetic teacher got fired.
Yeah. You know, interesting thing, the movie kind of switches one thing around in the hero's journey. You know, I talked about how usually in the first act, the hero refuses the call, you know, where he's called to do something important. That happened in the third act. Because
it happens right after he meets the girl.
Yeah. Is that your phone?
Yeah, sorry.
It's pretty awesome. He does sort of refuse a call earlier on where he meets the girl and she wants to go on a date with him. And he's like, oh, I got to go somewhere. I don't want, like, she's figured out his secret identity. And
he was not very good about keeping his secret identity.
Oh, I know. Either. Like, yeah.
Like how many people who are new to town who happen to have a radio thing in his basement? And yeah. Anyway,
sit on, you know, eat lunch on the stairs and chew blackjack gum. I mean, that's how she discovered him.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting a call right now, but I'm not going to take it because I'm on a roll about this and we're behind in what we're trying to cover on this show. So if you got to tell us something about this show, email me about it. But okay. So, yep, there he goes. There he goes away. So more about this movie. So it had a really clear hero's journey. Oh, the other time when he actually refuses the call in the third act, it's basically he's going to give up radio because he's about to get busted. And his new girlfriend like talks him into it and says, no, you have to do this for the kids, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, she's the mentor too.
She's the mentor. Is she the mentor? Yeah, I guess from the very beginning, she's the poetry lady. Yeah. And so she has contact
with him before she meets him.
Right, exactly.
Which is kind of unusual because most of the time in the hero's journey, the mentor is much older and is in the same field that the guy's in and is not as able to, you know, really the main character in Pontypool would have been a perfect mentor for the main character.
Yeah,
in,
that'd be a good sequel.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it with hand puppets tonight on the internet. We'll be back, man.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Bobby, you look like a burglar. And rap music is just criminals yelling about their girlfriend's lady parts.
So the name of this episode is Time Flies When You're Eating Brains, because it's just going by so fast because we're having fun talking about zombies and stuff. So pump up the volume. Another reason this movie couldn't get made is it sends a good message in our minds, which would be a bad message in most people's minds, which is to kids, which is basically, don't go to college. Just do what you want to do. Like most people, if they told their parents, when I grow up, I want to be a radio personality, they'd say, okay, well, let's look at some colleges where they have a journalism school. No, this kid didn't go to college. He just did it, you know? And I don't think that kids should do pirate radio because you have to break the law to do it. And you can do it for free, wider on the internet now anyway. So that's what I recommend. But yeah, man, kids, just do it. Just do good thing. I like the anti-suicide message in this too.
There's also there was a really strong kind of anti-bullying theme. Like when the kid called in and he was talking about being bullied for being gay. And he's like, first off, it's pretty early for it to like just have gay roll off of the script like it's not even a big deal. But then on top of that, he's like, oh no, in that situation you were the strong one, you were the brave one, they're the weaklings, they're the ones who are afraid. I felt like that was a really good message for kids too.
Yeah, and you know, he'd learned a lesson and been richer for the experience on how to deal with callers, because he didn't really like have anything to do with that guy killing himself who called in, but and he did give that guy some good advice, but he originally was kind of off the cuff with him and he felt bad about it, you know, and wanted to be better to the next troubled caller.
That's how I used to deal with it. When I was in high school, I had people call me saying, I'm going to kill myself if you don't talk to me on the phone.
Call you where? Oh, on the phone?
Like on the phone. Yeah. I had a girl call me and say, hey, if you don't talk me down, I'm going to take this bottle of pills. And I said, oh, read me the label. And she read me the label. I had no idea what it was. And I just said, oh, that won't kill you. That'll just kill your liver. You'll end up in a hospital bed for the rest of your life.
I had a girl.
But she didn't do it.
I had a girl that was not a lover of mine. It was a friend of mine in San Francisco one time call me when I was in a rock band. She called me and said that she was going to kill herself. And I said, why don't you come over and let me play with your body before you kill it?
Wow.
And she that did. She came over and she had sex with me and she did not kill herself.
Well, you saved her life, I guess.
By playing with her body before she threw it away.
This was the era of teen suicides, too. Like, you know, this came out in, 1990? Kurt Cobain was 1993.
I don't know if it was such the era of it, but it was the era of parents going, oh, my God, teens killed himself and we know about it. We need to do something. And I also liked a lot about how in this movie they showed, realistically, this stupid reaction that adults would have. Like, oh, this guy's on the radio offering advice to people and we don't like it. We're going to set up a school hotline for troubled teens.
Yeah, her reaction to that was so great. It's like, oh, it's 8:30. I guess I'm okay. Oh, it's 5:00. I guess I'll kill myself.
Yeah.
His advice for suicide was the advice that I consistently gave when I was a teen at that age. And that was, hey, if you're ready to die and you've got nothing to live for, then go and find something to live for. If you're willing to sacrifice everything, then that means you've got nothing to lose. Go be crazy. Go rebel. Go take the risks you're not willing to take if you're willing to die anyway.
There's some advice I've heard. The only place I've ever heard this is in San Francisco NA meetings. It's pretty mind blowing. It's if you're thinking of killing yourself, you're thinking of killing the wrong person.
Wow.
Someone told me that one time because I was really angry about something. You know, I wasn't suicidal, but I was like, someone said, "What should I?" I said, "I have a sponsee who's suicidal. What should I say to him?" And my sponsor said to say that, and I said it to the guy. And the guy says that it helped him not kill himself because he like obsessed on murdering the person he was mad at long enough to not kill himself and then to not drink and then to not kill the guy. So it worked.
I mean, yeah. I guess it does turn it into a kind of righteous anger.
Yeah.
And that might be better for processing. But that's a risky move, man.
It is a risky move. I would never do that now. But my sponsor.
Anything you say is a risky move. So handing it over to the government hotline is probably the riskiest move you could make.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Yeah. The adults in that were so like believably square, too. And the kids were cool. You know, the thing.
They hit a kid. I was shocked. You never see that. They couldn't do that in a movie anymore.
Do what?
The principal punched a kid.
Oh, yeah. You know, the thing I didn't buy about that movie, though, was that the whole school practically embraced him. That wouldn't happen. But, you know, it's a movie. And it's a good one. And it's Pump Up the Volume, and it's on Netflix. It's also... No, it's on... Netflix is a DVD, and it's on YouTube for streaming in low quality. It's been a great show, Davi.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Worms. Man. Worms.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your cervix.
This has been Michael Dean After Dark. I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain and left you in a better place than where we found you. We'll be here 5 nights a week, same time.
I'm not implying that you have lady parts. I'm just making a play on words.
For more, that's MichaelWDean.com. Thank you and have a wonderful evening.
Lady parts.
Good night.